Bus passengers were slowly realizing that they weren't just having a bad day. The situation wasn't going to be dealt with by the 10 o'clock news. Things had fallen apart, totally and irreversibly. The country, maybe even the world, was under siege.
But all I really care about is that my son is dead. Does that make me a terrible person?
The bus's current heading was north on the A38, just past Derby. Nick still held on to a slither of hope that they might chance upon a local army regiment or police force, but the current plan was simply to keep their eyes peeled for any sign of authority at all. What form that would take, none of them knew. None of them cared. The current road was one of the few that still flowed with traffic. The various remaining drivers were now mostly careful, and things were moving along in an orderly fashion. The only problem was that most people didn't seem to know where they were going. Many cars were parked off on the verge, their petrol tanks dry after miles of aimless driving. Some people wandered the side of the road in small groups, trying to hitch a lift. Dave stopped for a couple of people whenever he could, but had no choice but to ignore most of them. Those he did pick up were eternally grateful. Those he ignored screamed obscenities. In addition to the passengers they'd started with, the bus now held Cassie, a 20-something nail technician from Tamworth, Carl, a factory worker they'd picked up on the outskirts of blood-soaked Ulrawas, and 5 minutes ago they'd picked up Catherine, a supermarket manager from Birmingham. She had been on her way to a company meeting in Matlock when a frenzied driver had sideswiped her car at a set of traffic lights. She had kept mostly to herself, but had been kind enough to share her bottle of water with the teenaged boy in the yellow coat when he started to feel unwell. His hand had not yet stopped bleeding. It turned out the teenager's name was Jake. He was a creative writing student from Wolverhampton University. His hand was a mess from where the girl had bitten him, tough to even look at, in fact. It had blistered up and was leaking a kind of mustardy pus along with all the blood. He was currently lying on the bus's back seat, applying a bandage that Dave had given him from the vehicle's first aid kit. The guy in the overalls with the calloused hands and dreadlocks was named Mark. He was a Jamaican-born mechanic currently living in Smethwick. The reason he'd remained so quiet throughout previous events was that he had a broken leg. Nick hadn't noticed it when he'd first gotten on the bus, but the man's left leg was set in a grubby white cast with a West Brom FC sticker on it and a crude drawing of a throstle. The man had told Nick he'd wanted to intervene during the incident involving the little girl, but had expected only to make things worse with his cumbersome leg. He seemed genuinely upset about it. Nick wasn't holding a grudge. The two old ladies were Ethel and Margaret. They had become sullen and voiceless in the last hour or so, a stark contrast to their earlier natterings. It seemed they had only been able to take so much before losing their ability to persevere.
"We're running on fumes," Dave said from the front of the bus. "Every time we pass a petrol station, it's totally blocked up with car wrecks or swimming with sick people. We're going to have to pick somewhere to turn in, or we're going to come to a stop in the middle of the road."
"Okay," Nick said. "Let's get off this road as soon as we can. Maybe park off in the woods somewhere."
"Will do."
Dave took the next slip road and headed west into a residential area full of Victorian semis and dusty shops. Nick eyed up every road sign as they passed. After a few minutes, he pointed.
"There," he said. "Head for that."
Dave glanced at him.
"Head for what?"
"The Ripley Heights Country Park. I bet we can hole up there. I just saw a sign for it saying to head left." Dave flicked on the turn indicator, despite the total lack of traffic behind him. The bus entered onto a steep incline, with woodland on either side. Nick was immediately pleased by the lack of buildings. If they found a rural enough area, they may just be able to sit tight somewhere until they could figure out what to do next.
Or until help arrives.
While the bus continued to climb, Nick decided to take a seat and attempt a conversation with Eve again. For some reason he felt an attachment to her, perhaps because their relationship stretched back to before their presence on the bus. Perhaps because she was there because of him.
"I feel responsible for her. Fuck knows why."
"Hey," she said to him as he took a seat beside her. "Any idea where we're going?" "We're heading for a country park," he said. "We're hoping it'll be deserted enough that we can stop for a while and catch our breath. We're running low on petrol, so it's not like we have a choice either way." Eve stared out of the window, thoughtfully.
I wonder if my family are okay.
Nick thought about Deanna and James. They certainly were not okay, but there could still be hope for other people. He knew he should care about that, regardless of how hard it was to think beyond his own losses.
I guess it'll be a while before any of us find out how bad things really are, he said. I think Jake has a mobile phone if you want to try and call your parents.
Already tried, she said. My call wouldn't go through. That Catherine has a phone too, and it wouldn't connect either. No calls are getting through to anyone.
Well, just assume they're okay then. Anything else and you'll drive yourself crazy.
Eve looked him in the eye.
I'm scared, Nick.
He went to put his arm around her the same way he would whenever Deanna was anxious, but he stopped himself, remembering that he barely knew the girl.
I'm scared too, he said, keeping his hands in his lap. I'm scared that even if we get through this, things will never be the same for any of us. We've all lost too much.
Do you think terrorists did this?
Nick hadn't thought much about it, but he considered it a possibility. It could also be a dozen other things.
I don't think it's worth thinking about why this has happened for now. Leave that to the experts. All we need to focus on right now is sticking together and getting through the rest of the day in one piece.
You think we'll manage to?
He nodded.
Yeah, I think we're through the worst of it.
This day can't get any worse.
At least I hope so, Nick thought to himself as he looked out of the window at the passing trees.
Just try not to worry, he said. The bus came to a stop in a grassy picnic area that was surrounded by woods on all sides. No other vehicles were parked there.
Well done, Nick told Dave. This place looks pretty deserted.
Dave switched off the engine and leant back in his chair. He rubbed at his eyeballs with two meaty fists and then blinked them a few times.
I'm just glad to take a break from driving. I would have gone cross-eyed after much longer.
I'll bet, said Nick. We all owe you for keeping us safe. I think we can stretch our legs for a little while now and take a breather. Then perhaps we can check out the surrounding area.
Sounds good to me.
Dave pressed a button on the dashboard and the bus's pneumatic doors opened. Everyone got to their feet and started piling out. There were multiple sighs of relief as they each stretched their muscles and took deep breaths of the crisp country air. The temperature was a little low for comfort, so Nick fastened his coat around himself before joining them outside. He winced as the garment brushed his various injuries.
You okay? Eve asked him. Your face still looks pretty bad.
Just a little sore. He prodded at the slick wound on his cheek. But I'll live.
Mark limped off the bus behind Nick, his cast sinking into the mud as he landed awkwardly.
Hey, he said. Do we have any water or snack food? I'm beginning to feel lightheaded, man.
Me too, added one of the old ladies.
We'll just have to make do for now, said Dave, taking on an air of authority that he probably felt was rightfully his as driver of the bus. We can look to see if there are any shops around here later, once we've all had a rest.
Bad idea, said Pauline. We're safer just to stay put.
Mark hopped on his one good leg over to the side of the bus and leant up against a wheel arch.
We'll need to eat something eventually, lady. So how long do we plan on staying here?
I don't know, said Dave.
Well, don't you think we should have a plan? Asked Pauline.
Dave huffed.
If you have one, then I'm all ears. Until then, just keep quiet.
Look, said Nick, for now let's just enjoy doing nothing. We don't know enough to make any sort of plan, which is why we just need to take things one moment at a time. Let's just be glad that we're off the road.
Everyone seemed to grumble in agreement before breaking off into their own little patches of space. The supermarket manager, Catherine, went and sat on a nearby picnic table and began shaping her long red fingernails with a file from her handbag. The two elderly women sat on another bench just a few feet away. Eve stood around aimlessly next to Dave, who had decided to check the oil level of the bus. Nick thought it was pointless, seeing as they were out of petrol anyway. Jake stayed on the bus, still feeling unwell. Carl chatted to Cassie nearby, and Mark remained leaning against the bus, taking the weight off his cast. Nick chose to approach Cassie and Carl. He hadn't spoken to them much yet and thought it was wise to know everybody he was with.
You folks okay? He asked them both.
Carl laughed.
As well as can be expected. Can't say I'm a big fan of sticking here indefinitely, though. We've all got families to get home to. I know, Nick agreed, but deep down he knew it was no longer true for him. Ideally, we'll be able to find some help soon, but for now we just need to be safe. We all saw what's happening to people.
It's like they've all gone crazy, Cassie said meekly. She seemed like a shy girl.
Nick nodded. I think it's a virus or something. My son was feeling ill last night, and then this morning... He didn't need or want to finish the sentence. Everyone had been through their own personal torments, and that meant that they understood each other's losses without having to hear them explained. It was almost like being part of a club. I don't know if it's something that can be cured, Nick said. Right now, our best bet is just to stick together.
Safety in numbers, huh? Said Carl.
I'm glad you people found me, Cassie said. I don't know what I would have done if you hadn't. I watched my best friend get ripped to shreds by her own father, gutted like an animal. Then she got up and came after me.
Nick scratched his chin. She got up and came after you? Cassie nodded.
Like 5 minutes after her dad attacked her. We managed to hole up in the bathroom, but Michelle was hurt bad. I mean real bad. Her neck and stomach were gushing, and the floor tiles were covered in blood. Then she just stopped breathing, and I knew she was dead. But 2 minutes later, she was back on her feet again, coming after me just like her dad did. Only she was different than him. She was...
Slower, said Nick, remembering how Mr. Curtis had been fast and agile until his throat got cut on the fish tanks, and then afterwards had moved very slow and drunkenly. People don't come back from the dead, Carl scoffed, wiping his hands on his jeans. He's crazy. Nick shrugged. I think crazy got invited to the party today. Whatever virus is turning people insane is doing something else to them when they get badly injured. It still makes them want to kill us, but they get clumsy and slow. Like walking corpses, Carl scoffed, still unwilling to grasp such a concept.
Maybe it's something in their blood, Cassie suggested. Maybe when they get injured and lose enough blood, the virus leaks out and makes them weaker.
She shook her head and sighed.
Or maybe they really are just dead, and this is the end of the world.
You've been watching too many horror films, Carl said. We should just stay calm and wait for this whole thing to blow over. I guarantee this time next week we'll all be back at home watching the news about whatever this is, and it won't be that the dead are coming back to life to eat the living. I hope you're right, said Nick, moving away. I really do. He headed over towards Mark and nodded at the man as he neared him at the side of the bus.
You doing okay, pal?
The man asked Nick.
As well as can be expected.
How's the leg?
Mostly healed. Hurt it a few weeks ago at me old man's garage. Me own stupid fault, you know. Tripped down one of them pits. Isn't hurting too much now, though. Just make me a clumsy devil, you know.
Nick laughed.
I wouldn't want to have to make a getaway with that thing. For sure. I'm just blessed Dave picked me up. A right calamity we is in right now, you know. Putting it mildly. Well, if we all stick together, we will get through this, I is certain.
Nick patted the man on the shoulder. I think so too, Mark. It's good to meet you.
Likewise. Think I'll go back on the bus now. Take the weight off me leg, see how the lad is doing.
Nick nodded as the towering Jamaican hobbled off.
I'll let you know if anything transpires, he shouted after him.
You part of the morale squad or something?
Said Eve, standing nearby. She had a frown on her face.
Who made it your job to check up on everybody?
Nick turned around to face her. The sour look on her face, mixed with smudged makeup, gave her the look of a sad clown.
What's the problem? He said. I'm just trying to keep myself busy.
She shrugged.
No problem. Just wonder why you bother, that's all. We're all fucked, but you keep going around like everything's going to be fine. We got a bus with no petrol, a guy with a broken leg, and a pair of geriatric bingo warriors.
Nick huffed at her.
Well, being negative isn't going to do anybody any favours, is it? Should I have just left you in that closet?
Yeah, probably. We're safer than standing in the middle of a field or letting that crazy girl attack us.
No one exactly let her do it, Eve. And the girl was sick, not crazy. Eve flapped her arms.
Are you kidding me? The people we've seen don't just need an aspirin. They're totally screwed. They're monsters.
My son is not a monster. My wife is not a monster.
You're as bad as Cassie.
I know, she said. I was listening to what she was saying, and she's right. Soon as you put one of those crazies down, they get right back up and stumble after you all over again. Only this time, they're dead.
Sorry, I have trouble believing that, even with all that I've seen. Dead people don't walk around. There must be some other explanation that makes sense.
Eve flapped her arms.
Well, viruses don't usually turn people into bloodthirsty psychopaths either. But hey, you know what? It happened anyway. Someone came and turned the fucked-up factor all the way to 11.
Nick pointed his finger. Just calm down, Eve. You're getting worked up.
Get your goddamn finger out of my face. Who made you so important that you think you can manage everyone?
Eve, I'm just trying to help. What's gotten into you?
I just don't want to be here with you people. I don't feel safe.
A scream from the bus cut the conversation short. Nick looked around to witness one of the bus's side windows cracking. It looked like someone's head had been pushed through it and then pulled back inside. Eve looked up.
What the hell?
Nick sprinted over to the bus doors and jumped up the steps. When he looked down the aisle, he was confused by what he saw. The teenager, Jake, had shoved Mark up against the side of the bus, forcing the man's head back against the broken window as he tried to bite a chunk out of his face. Mark tried to resist, but his bulbous cast was wedged beneath the seats. Nick fell forward as Dave ran into the back of him. When he too saw what was happening, he swore loudly.
Shite! Jake is one of them!
Nick shook his head.
How? What happened?
Then it occurred to him.
Jake's hand! The little girl bit him! She infected him!
Then it must be a virus, Dave said. We have to get away from the kid before we catch it too.
We can't just leave Mark. He needs our help.
The Jamaican mechanic's screams were suddenly cut short as Jake's teeth sank deep into the man's windpipe. Nick watched in horror as veins and cartilage were torn away like wet spaghetti. Dave grabbed a hold of Nick's woolen coat.
We're already too late. Come on!
He hated to run, to just abandon Mark as Jake ripped his face and neck into bloody shreds, but he had to face it that Dave was right. It was too late.
We have to get the hell away from Jake.
Dave was already off the bus. He shouted at Nick to hurry up. But Nick was frozen. Jake turned his head and spotted him still standing there at the front of the bus. He hissed with blood-stained teeth. Nick finally managed to get himself moving. He spun around and leapt off the bus as quickly as his feet would carry him. Dave punched a big red button beside the bus's door and it clamped shut with a hiss. A second later, Jake crashed up against the glass, glaring at them with swollen, bloodshot eyes. Gory chunks of flesh hung from his teeth and he spat and snarled. And he let out a screech. Everybody outside the bus gathered together. Dave motioned for them all to get moving.
Everybody run, he shouted. Jake is infected. We have to get away from him or he'll pass the disease on to us.
There was a brief smattering of anxious mumblings, but then everybody took off like it was the start of a race. Nick held up at the back, trying to keep everybody moving in the same direction. The two old ladies were clearly the slowest and needed help to make it across the uneven and muddy terrain. He glanced back behind him to see the bus shrinking away into the distance as the group put distance between themselves and it. Then he saw Jake emerging from the front of the bus, climbing through the hole where the windscreen used to be.
Shit!
Nick started pushing the two old ladies to move faster.
Come on, come on! He shouted. Move!
Behind them, Jake let out another piercing scream. The fleeing passengers picked up speed, finding energy reserves that only the fear of death could liberate from a person's muscles. Eve and Cassie were at the front of the pack now, heading for the tree line at the edge of the wide picnic area. Carl and Dave were right behind them, their rotund figures betraying their respectable sprinting abilities. Then was Paul and Catherine, barefoot after taking off their heels and keeping up a decent pace. Finally, at the back, the two old ladies ran their hardest. Nick was close behind them, urging them to go faster. Nick glanced back. It wasn't good. Jake would be on them long before they all made it to the tree line. Even if they did all make it, they wouldn't be safe. Jake would just follow them into the woods.
Game over, man. What the hell do we do now?
Suddenly, one of the old ladies stopped dead. She doubled over, clutching at her chest. Her friend stopped too, putting an arm around her.
"Ethel! Ethel!" she shouted. "We have to keep moving!"
Nick slid to a stop beside them both.
"Come on," he urged. "He'll be on us any minute. We have to keep moving."
Ethel fell to her knees, wheezing.
My heart! I can't! I need to stop!"
"No," said Margaret. "I won't leave you here."
Nick grabbed Margaret's brittle forearm and tried to pull her away.
"Come on, we have to go, or else we're all dead."
"Then you go,"
Margaret urged, pulling back her arm, surprisingly strong.
"But I'm not leaving Ethel to face that monster alone."
Jake was getting closer, would be on them any second. Ethel rose up on one knee. She grabbed Margaret's hand, squeezed it tight.
"I'm not letting you get hurt because of me. If you don't get moving right now, Margaret Skinner, I will come back to haunt you. I swear I will."
Margaret looked ready to burst into tears. Nick stared down the field. Jake was only meters away now, lolloping across the grass like a deranged ape. Ethel fell back down onto the floor, rolling onto her side and clutching at her chest. She looked up at her friend and hissed the word,
"Go!"
Nick grabbed Margaret's arm, and this time she didn't resist. The two of them got moving, leaving behind Ethel as she suffered a heart attack on the floor. Nick hoped it was that which would claim her, and not Jake's savage teeth. But it was not to be. The last thing he heard before Ethel's screams pierced the air was the old lady shouting at Jake,
"I've taken shits harder than you, you pussy!"
Nick couldn't help but chuckle as he and the others passed into the shadows of the tree line. The only thing that wiped the smile from his face was when he looked back and saw the feisty old dame being ripped apart like a tough old steak. Jake's yellow coat had suddenly become very red. Chapter 7. Nick and the others eventually came to a stop in a clearing about half a mile into the woods. Everyone was sweating, having run uphill most of the way. At least they'd managed to leave Jake behind as he chowed down on poor old Ethel. Nick could still hear the infected teenager's animalistic shrieks sounding off in the distance. Dave slumped up against a gnarled oak tree. Perspiration soaked his dirty brown and grey hair and matted it against his forehead.
"I pray we never have to do that again," he said, panting. "I think I left one of my lungs back there."
"Tell me about it," said Nick.
He knelt down on the floor and tried to catch his breath.
"Has anyone else been bitten since this morning?"
"Why?"
Cassie asked.
"Because that's what happened to Jake. That little girl bit him on the hand. Now he's infected. That's how this thing is spreading. One infected person bites a healthy person, and that person becomes infected, bites the next person, and repeats the cycle. I feel dumb for not understanding it until now, but it makes sense. I just can't believe how quick it happens."
Carl spat a wad of saliva into the mud and wiped the moisture from his face.
"So we could all end up like one of those things?"
"If you get bitten, yes," said Nick.
"Has anybody been bitten?" Everyone shook their head.
"Okay," said Dave, seeming to relax a little. "We all better be real careful from now on. We come across someone infected, and we do our best to run for it. No trying to fight with them like we did that little girl."
"That was unavoidable," said Nick, feeling bad about Jake's fate and how it had involved him trying to help with the little girl.
"Unavoidable or not," said Eve, "we have to be more careful. I'm not ending up like one of those monsters."
"They're still people," Nick shouted.
"My wife and son were infected, and I'll be damned if I'm going to let you keep calling them monsters."
"I'm sorry,"
Eve said, folding her arms.
"But as nice as people might once have been, if they've caught whatever this thing is, then they're monsters now, plain and simple."
Nick clenched his fists. Before anything else was said, Dave shushed the both of them.
"There's no point arguing over it. I think we all know, deep down, that these people are sick, infected, or whatever. But they're also dangerous, and we cannot forget that."
"I think some of them are dead," said Cassie.
The group went silent.
"This nonsense again," Carl muttered.
"I think she's right," said Eve. "Nick killed an infected old man back at the garden centre where he rescued me.
The guy came right back to life and came after us again. He was all messed up and slow and everything, but he was still moving around, even with most of his neck missing.
Nick shook his head. He couldn't contain his grief any longer. It had been building in the pit of his stomach like an ulcer, and now felt like a leaden weight in his guts. He had to let it out.
I killed my son.
He was infected too, but he didn't come back to life after I killed him. He stayed dead. He is dead.
Well, that shoots Cassie's theory right out of the water, said Carl. The dead are not getting up and walking around.
Nobody said anything. The full weight of the confession suddenly dawned on Nick, and he didn't like the way so many sets of eyes were suddenly staring at him. He didn't want their judgment, not about what had happened to James. They could never understand his loss, or what had occurred in that kitchen. Nick wished he hadn't spoken, but the words had exploded from him like pus from an infected wound. He hadn't been able to stem it once it began flowing.
And now they all know. They know what I did.
Nick stood up and chomped his way deeper into the woods, wanting to escape their stares and judgments.
And my own guilt.
A few minutes later, he slumped down against an old spruce tree that came up out of the ground at a weird angle. He leant back against its trunk and started bashing his head against the bark, again and again, harder and harder. Eventually, he saw stars. He burst into tears, crying so hard that he thought he might suffocate as the sobs seized his chest and cramped his diaphragm.
James, Deanna, I miss you both so much. You're my world and you're not here. I'm alone and I'm going through hell. What do I do? How do I go on without you?
As Nick's grief took hold of him, he wanted to die. He wanted it all to be over.
I can't go on.
Eventually, his body became so weak from sobbing that he could no longer even sustain his own weight. He slid sideways down the spruce's bark and fell onto his back. He found himself staring up at the grey sky, wondering if it might rain. Covered in dirt and blood, the thought of being cleansed by Mother Nature was comforting. Perhaps the heavens themselves would open and drown him in a downpour. He hoped so. A twig snapped nearby. Nick rolled onto his chest and looked up in the direction of the noise. Hey, said Eve, stepping over the undergrowth and hiking towards him. She came and knelt down on the ground nearby, stretched out her legs, and then lay down right next to him. Nick sighed.
Hey.
What are you doing? She asked.
Just getting some stuff out of my system. I'm sorry.
What for?
For the things I said earlier.
Well, pretty much everything I've said to you since we met.
I know I've been a bit up and down. I'm hormonal at the best of times, and this situation certainly isn't helping.
You said I rescued you. Nick recalled the words she had used.
Yeah, well, that's because you did. I just don't like feeling like I owe anybody anything. It's a flaw I have. I'm sorry I called your family monsters.
It's okay, Nick said. I just don't want to think of my family as being beyond help. I keep trying to convince myself that this will all blow over and that Deanna and James will be waiting for me as soon as I get back home.
James is your son?
He was my son. I'm pretty sure he's gone.
What happened?
He was sick, just like Jake was, and the little girl. And everybody else, I guess. He came running at me in the kitchen like a wild animal, and I slipped. We both fell down, and his head hit the chair.
He didn't come back, like Mr. Curtis?
No. I was in the house for another 10 minutes after that, and he stayed still. Mr. Curtis was back on his feet almost right away.
Maybe it has something to do with their injuries, said Eve.
Nick shrugged.
Dead is dead, isn't it?
Why would it matter how they die? Another twig snapped.
You have to go for the head, said the deep voice of a stranger.
Chapter 8 Nick leapt to his feet. So did Eve. Standing several feet away, beside a large conifer bush, were three large men, two black and one white. One of the black men was bald with a pointed goatee, while the other was well-groomed with short cropped hair and stubble. The white man was huge, 6.5 feet at least, and heavily bearded. He looked like one of those American bikers you often saw on television with names like Axel or Bones. All three of them were wearing the same grey tracksuits and white trainers.
Who are you? Nick asked them.
Could ask you the same question, said the black guy with the pointed goatee.
The large white man put up his hand to silence his associate and then smiled at Nick.
My name is Jan, Janwin Banks. This man on my right is Rene.
The charmer on my left with the Fu Manchu is Dash. Don't ask what his real name is, though, because he won't tell you. You're prisoners, Nick surmised from their matching attire. He backed away slowly, pulling Eve with him. Jan held his hands up.
Hey, brother, there's no need to fear us.
We're stuck in the same shit puddle that you are. We're just trying to make it somewhere safe.
How did you get free? Eve asked.
The fuck it got to do with you, sweetheart? Said the one named Dash.
Jan sighed and shook his head. He took a step forward, his large hands still out in front of him.
Let's just say we're victims of circumstance. The guards that were relocating us to a prison in Nottingham are all dead.
Nick and Eve backed away more rapidly. Jan laughed and shook his head.
No, not because of us. There was an accident. Some silly bollocks driving a Land Rover went right into our minibus. Next thing I know, there's a bunch of lunatics tearing apart our POs. We weren't cuffed or anything, so we did a runner. It was either that or suffer the same fate as the guards. There were five of us to begin with, but we didn't all make it. It appears the world has become quite dangerous as of late. In fact, I preferred it on the inside.
There's some sort of virus infecting people, said Eve, making everyone crazy.
The man nodded and scratched at his impressive beard.
Makes sense. People don't act like savages for no reason, not even in prison.
Nick asked a question.
You said something about needing to go for the head?
Dash spoke up in reply.
Yeah, it's the only sure way to put 'em down for sure, you dig?
Jan shrugged in agreement.
Don't know if you've noticed, but when one of these infected people dies, they have a tendency to come back.
You know that for sure? Nick asked.
Jan nodded solemnly.
Told you, said Eve.
When they come back, said Jan, they come back different. Slower and easier to deal with, but they tend to group together and come after you in a pack. You can only stop them for good with a good blow to the head.
Eve gave Nick a look, and he understood what she was thinking. James had not come back because he had struck his head on a chair. He had been spared the fate of coming back as a ghoul. There was a certain amount of relief in that, but not much.
How do you know all this? Nick asked.
Yeah, because we saw that shit, said Dash. We've been hiking it all the way from Nottingham. Seen some seriously wacky shenanigans since then, blood.
It wasn't too bad at first, said Jan. But the last couple of hours, things have gotten much worse. I don't even know the name of the last town we passed through, but there was no one there left alive. They were all infected or dead. We managed to lay low and avoid them, but if they'd spotted us, then there would have been no chance to escape them all. That's why we made for the countryside and these woods. I suppose you two had the same idea?
There are half a dozen of us, actually, said Nick. He wanted to let the three men know that he wasn't without backup if they tried anything. We came here in a bus.
Mind if we join up with you? Jan asked.
Dash pulled a face.
You serious? We don't need to team up with this honky and his bitch.
Nick clenched his fist and took a step forwards.
I think you might want to learn to keep your mouth shut, blood.
Dash stepped forward to meet him.
You want a piece of me, honky?
Jan stepped between them both.
Look, with all that's going on, I think safety in numbers is the only thing that's going to help any of us. If we join up, then we can try to figure something out together. No way are we joining with you guys, said Nick. We don't know anything about you.
Jan sighed.
What if I said, please? I promised to keep Dash on a tight leash. To tell you the truth, I'm beat and pretty darn terrified. I just want to be around other people, you know? If you allow us to come with you and your group, then I promise we won't be a burden. We'll pull our weight. Nick didn't know what to do. Was it really a good idea to team up with a bunch of criminals? Could he turn his back on somebody asking for help? What were you in for? Eve asked.
I tried to rob a bank, Jan replied bluntly.
Nick cleared his throat. And what about your friends?
I'm innocent, said Dash. Sure you are, Jan said, frowning at his companion. Dash here was done for dealing. As for Renee, I don't honestly know. Fella doesn't talk none. Only reason I know his name is because I heard the guards use it before they bit the dust. He's a bit of a strange one, to be honest, but no harm that I can tell.
Nick stared at Renee and found himself agreeing. The man was a picture of gentle calmness. He was almost smiling, but not quite. The blinking of his eyes was a slow and careful affair, like that of a dozing cat. For some reason, Nick felt no sense of danger from the man. It was his two colleagues that were the bigger worry. But what could he do? It was a free country, and he couldn't exactly stop the prisoners from following him. It would be better to extend the hand of friendship than to make an enemy. Nick didn't like the thought of a bunch of angry criminals hunting them through the woods. Okay, he said finally, but you keep yourselves to yourselves and don't upset anyone. These people have been through a lot. Jan smiled.
I understand. Lead the way, brother.
Nick emerged back into the clearing. Everybody was standing around waiting for him. Eve had told them to stay put when she'd followed after him. When they saw the three newcomers, they grew immediately apprehensive.
Who are they? Dave demanded.
Nick introduced the three men. This is Jan, Renee, and Dash. They've had a similar day to the rest of us.
Why are they all wearing matching tracksuits? Cassie asked.
Nick decided that honesty was the best policy. Because they're prisoners, he said. They're going to tag along with us for a while.
Are you shitting me? Said Dave. They're supposed to be locked up, not roaming free. No way are they coming with us.
Dash sucked at his teeth and tugged at his long beard, but didn't say anything. Perhaps he really is going to behave himself. Jan, as was becoming the pattern, was the one to speak on behalf of the prisoners.
Look, he said. We are indeed supposed to be locked up, but right now there isn't really a lot in the way of authority. We were sprung free by pure accident, and ever since then we've just been trying to survive. We didn't escape by force, it was just a fluke of circumstance. What would you have us do?
Dave sighed.
You better not be rapists or murderers.
Cassie let out a whimper.
Jan waved a hand. We're not, I promise you. We may not be angels by any lengths of the imagination, but we're just lost souls right at the moment, same as you. We don't want to become one of those things.
Do you know what those things are? Asked Catherine.
She sounded worried and was chewing at her fingernails. Jan shrugged.
I don't know what they are. I probably don't know any more than you folks do. Your man Nick thinks a virus did this. I'm inclined to agree. What I can say for sure is that I've seen dead bodies walking around and eating people. As for what could cause such a thing, I have no idea. I'm not a praying man, usually, but I would suggest asking the old man up there to take mercy on us, because it seems like he's pretty pissed off at the moment.
Carl scoffed.
You think it's the end of days?
Jan shrugged.
Isn't it? You think this isn't the end of the world as we know it? Whether it was God, terrorists, or something else entirely, things have just taken one hell of a turn for the worse.
Cassie whimpered again.
We're all going to die. Eventually they'll get us.
Pauline went over and comforted the girl while the rest of the group exchanged nervous glances. The silence was broken by Catherine as she began to cough and splutter into her hands.
You okay there? Nick asked her.
She caught her breath and nodded.
I'm fine. Just got a frog in my throat.
So, what's the plan? Jan asked. Do you folks have a destination in mind?
Does anywhere count? Said Nick.
Better than nowhere, I guess.
Jan turned on the spot and pointed.
Me and the boys came from the main roads in that direction.
Things are pretty bad back in the towns, so I would suggest we keep heading this way and stay in the woods.
This whole area is a country park, apparently, Nick said. Maybe we'll find help somewhere up the hill. There might be a craft centre or a farm or something.
Sounds good, said Jan.
We're happy to do whatever you folks think best.
Dash rolled his eyes and grumbled. Being subservient obviously did not sit well with the young criminal. Nick confronted him about it.
That okay with you?
Dash nodded.
Yeah, man. I'm sound.
Catherine let out another racking cough. This time she seemed unable to stop. Dash eyeballed her suspiciously.
What the fuck is wrong with this bitch?
Jan walked up to Catherine and put his hand beneath her chin. He forced her head up to look at him and then stared into her eyes.
She has it, he said. She's infected.
Nick hurried over.
What are you talking about? That's not possible.
Then he saw Catherine's swollen, bloodshot eyes and knew that it was true. She was infected.
We need to put her down, said Jan.
Catherine managed to halt her coughing enough to stumble backwards with her hands outstretched.
No, no, I'm fine. Leave me alone, please. Just leave me alone.
Jan stalked after her. Nick grabbed the large man by his wrist, which turned out to be as thick as a tree trunk.
Back off, buddy. No one is killing anybody. Are you insane?
Jan looked at Nick like he was the one who was insane.
If we don't kill her now, she'll kill us later. I've seen it enough times to know.
He's right, said Dave. We've seen it too, with Jake.
But she can't have it, said Nick. She hasn't been bitten.
We don't know that, said Dave. How can we be sure?
It was the water, said Pauline. Nick turned around.
What?
When we picked her up, she had a bottle of water with her. Jake was feeling unwell, so she shared it with him. Cross-contamination. Jake passed the virus on to her via his saliva on the bottle.
Are you kidding me? Said Carl. What virus acts that fast? What virus gets to someone just by swigging from the same bottle?
Nick thought about Deanna and how she had kissed James's wounded finger before putting a Beano plaster on it. Had that been all it had taken for her to catch it from her son? And for that matter, was the kid at school that bit James's finger the one that passed it on to him?
It can't be, said Nick. It can't be that contagious.
It is what it is, said Jan. We need to put her out of her misery before she loses it and comes after us. It's a kindness, believe me.
Fuck you! Catherine screamed. You're all fucking insane! You can't kill me! I'm fine!
More racking coughs caught a hold of her. She dropped to her knees, wheezing. Dash brought over a large fist-sized rock and handed it to Jan.
Turn the lights out.
Jan took the rock and moved towards Catherine. Nick stood in his way.
Not gonna happen.
Move out of the man's way, Dave ordered. We have no choice about this.
Yeah, added Carl. We have to think about ourselves.
Nick shook his head in disbelief.
Do you all think this is the right way to behave? You think we should just kill an innocent woman like it's nothing? You think this is okay?
I don't think it's okay, said Eve, standing next to Nick.
Me either, Pauline agreed. It's barbaric.
It's cowardly is what it is, said Margaret. This is not the way people in Britain behave. We're not French.
What about you, Cassie? Nick asked, trying to gain consensus. What do you think? She looked down at her feet and shrugged.
I don't want anyone to die.
Thank you, said Nick.
But I don't want to be attacked again either. I think Catherine is already dead if she has the virus.
Nick had to blink to believe it. Of all the people to advocate mob violence, shy and quiet Cassie had seemed the least likely.
You can't do this,
Nick said, exasperated yet holding firm in front of Jan's towering frame. Jan stared down at Nick, his crystal blue eyes set between twisting crags of crow's feet and wrinkles. It was a hard expression from a hard man, but it somehow seemed to soften slightly as Nick stood his ground. Eventually Jan nodded and let the rock fall from his hands to the ground.
It's a bad judgment, brother, but I promise to play things your way, so that's what I'm going to do. How do you want to proceed?
Nick sighed and let his shoulders deflate.
We just sent her in the opposite direction, he said. By the time she turns,
loses it or whatever, we'll be a mile and a half in the other direction. We don't need to kill...
A loud, wet thud. Nick spun around and was shocked by what he saw. Another wet thud.
Dave! What the hell are you doing?
Dave was sat astride Catherine and had just bludgeoned her with two meaty blows from a mean-looking rock. Nick watched in horror as the bus driver prepared to smash the rock down a third time into the terrified woman's face. She struggled beneath him. The pungent smell of urine wafted through the air, and a dark stain appeared on the crotch of her work trousers. Dave was going to kill her. But before he had a chance to deliver the final blow, Nick tackled the man to the ground and batted the bloody rock aside.
What the hell are you doing, Nick? We have to do this! Get off me! Get off me!
Catherine crawled away on her hands and knees, weeping and moaning as bruising swelled her bleeding face like a balloon. Nick held Dave down by his wrists and shouted after the woman.
Run, Catherine! Get out of here now and find some safe place!
She looked at him like a rabbit in the headlights, her face a crimson mask of blood and gore. She managed to scramble to her feet, and a moment later she was sprinting through the trees and disappearing into the distance. Once she was gone, Nick finally let go of Dave. The bus driver hopped up, brushing twigs and dry leaves from his knees.
You fool! I was doing what needed to be done! I wasn't going to let her take a bite out of me or anyone else! Now she's running around in the wilderness, ready to become a monster! The people she kills will be on your hands! You're out of your freaking mind, Eve shouted at him.
Pauline was shaking her head. She looked disgusted.
This isn't how people behave. We don't murder people just because they show signs of a cold.
We do now, said Dave, spitting at the ground furiously. If we want to stay alive! There was silence as that last sentence seemed to hang in the air between them all. It was quite possibly true, but that didn't mean it was a truth any of them wanted to accept. Eventually, Jan shrugged his shoulders and gave Nick a look which suggested they all just get over it.
Can't change it now, brother. For better or worse, we should just get going.
What? And just leave her out here alone? Said Pauline.
We'll alert the authorities when we can, Dave said. You can even tell them what I did. I'll stand by it, don't you worry.
There was more silence. You could almost bump into the atmosphere, it was so thick. Nick was utterly shocked by Dave's actions and by the rage that had suddenly taken over the man. He had read him all wrong. He thought Dave was a rescuer, but he wasn't. The man was something else entirely. Nick crossed his arms and started walking.
Fine, let's just get moving then. The quicker we find help, the quicker we can contact Catherine's family and tell them you just tried to smash her brains in.
It was more like he was trying to bash them out, to be honest, said Dash, giggling.
Nick ignored the bad joke and picked up speed, leaving the rest of the group several yards behind. After a couple dozen paces, Eve appeared beside him and kept pace. He wasn't about to admit it, but he was glad she was with him.
Chapter 9.
So what do you think we're going to find? Eve asked Nick as they trudged through the woods together. The rest of the group were trailing a few steps behind them. They all seemed to be following Dave's lead for the most part, sticking close to him. Regardless of whether or not they condoned the man's actions, his willingness to take charge had seemingly cemented his place of authority. Nick didn't care about that. He just didn't want to see anybody else get hurt. He hated to think of poor Catherine out there in the woods, alone, injured, and afraid. I don't know what we're going to find, he said honestly. I hope we can find somewhere with a nice big gate and a police sniper on the roof, but I'm not sure we'll get it. Eve laughed. I'm just wishing for some place with a shower. Nick looked at her. You're not still bothered about being mucky, are you? Not after what happened to Kath.
Hey, Eve cut him off. Don't give me grief. I'm just trying to focus my mind on the small things. Creature comforts, you know.
Sorry, I'm just angry about what happened back there.
Well, me too. But none of us know each other at the end of the day. We should just give each other a wide berth until we get through this. We have no power over the actions of others. Nobody here is boss.
Nick huffed. I'm not sure Dave would agree with you there. I would have stopped him if I knew what he was going to do.
I know you would have,
But you didn't and you can't, so forgive yourself. At least Catherine's still alive. She wouldn't be if you hadn't stepped in.
Nick remained silent, but he took what Eve said on board. There was no point ruminating on things he couldn't change. It would just distract him. And right now, a lapse in concentration could mean a death sentence.
"We've been walking through these woods for more than 2 hours," Margaret moaned. "I need to rest my plates."
Nick was still a little further in front of the others, but he stopped when he heard the old lady begging for a rest. He didn't know how long they'd been trudging through the woods, but 2 hours sounded about right.
"We keep moving," said Dave. "We can't afford to stop."
"Why not?" Eve asked. "What's the harm?"
Dave's eyes narrowed.
"We need to find help, or have you forgotten that? The longer we stay in these woods, the bigger the risk we get attacked again."
Eve turned a slow circle, taking in their surroundings, and then shrugged.
"I think we'll be okay to take a 15-minute break," she said. "We're totally alone."
Dave shook his head.
"We are not stopping."
"Who the hell put you in charge anyway?" Nick intervened. "Margaret needs to rest, so we let her. There's no argument to be had. She's an old lady. Show some compassion."
Margaret looked at Dave pleadingly. She seemed embarrassed that her age and weakness was causing a spat.
"Fine," he huffed. "She can have 10 minutes, but then we're not stopping again until we find help. We can't afford to be stuck in these woods once it gets dark."
Nick checked his watch. It was just after 2. It wouldn't get dark till about 7 p.m, but Dave did have a point. They didn't want to be wandering through the woods in the dark. Margaret crouched down and eased herself onto a fallen log. Pauline sat down beside the old lady and rubbed her back. Dave, Cassie, Carl, and the 3 prisoners huddled together between the trees and began chatting.
"That Dave is beginning to get on my tits," said Eve in a whisper to Nick. "Talk about a power trip. He thinks he's head boy scout or something."
"I know," Nick said. "I can't believe how quickly his attitude has changed. To think he was driving around, picking people up and rescuing them, and then to just attack Catherine the way he did." Eve knelt down and picked up a fallen pine cone. She ran her fingers over it for a couple of seconds before placing it beneath her nostrils and taking in its scent.
"I think that when we parked up the bus, the reality of the situation finally dawned on everybody. It was a bit like being in a cocoon when we were driving around, just watching all the chaos but not really being a part of it. Now that we're on foot, I think we've all realized just how vulnerable we are and how much the normal rules don't apply anymore. Dave is just doing what he thinks is right in a screwed-up way."
She tossed the pine cone into the distance. Nick backed up against a towering poplar tree and looked up at the sky through its leaves. Birds fluttered overhead.
"Are you doing okay?" he asked her.
"Who? Me? Yeah, why'd you ask?"
"Just checking. You're a young girl. This whole thing must be pretty frightening."
"Yeah. Well, to everybody, though, not just me. I'm an adult, same as the rest of you. 22 doesn't make me a child. It just makes me better looking than the rest of you."
Nick laughed.
"You think so?"
"Absolutely. Me and Margaret are the hottest people here."
Nick laughed harder. "Well, I didn't want to say anything, but the old dear does have something about her." Margaret peered over at them then and seemed confused by their stifled giggling. Perhaps she knew they were talking about her.
"Stop," he said. "We shouldn't chat about people behind their backs, especially not a nice old lady like her."
"I agree.
We should look after her. She reminds me of my gran, except my gran didn't swear as much."
They said no more as they enjoyed their 10-minute rest. Nearby, Dave checked his watch every 30 seconds, keeping exact time of how long the group had left. He wore a constant look of irritation on his jowly face. The 3 prisoners stuck close to him, the trio of men seeming to move as one. Dash was constantly cracking crude jokes and laughing, while Jan wore an endless expression of disapproval. The 3rd prisoner, Renee, stood completely still, watching all around him with a look of quiet interest.
"That guy is a mystery."
"Okay," Dave said, checking his watch one last time. "Time to get moving. I think if we carry on in this direction, it'll only be a matter of time before we come out somewhere."
"And then what?" Pauline asked. "What if there are more of those things?"
"We'll remain in the tree line and check stuff out before we make any decisions. We can send a scout if need be."
"A scout," Nick thought to himself. "Guy thinks he's a field general or something."
There were no arguments, so everyone got moving. This time, however, instead of moving on ahead, Nick stayed back amongst the group, mainly so he could keep an eye on Margaret. The old lady had recently witnessed her friend being ripped apart and deserved their compassion, but right now she wasn't getting it from the likes of Dave. Nick would have to make sure she was looked after. Another half hour went by before the woods thinned out. The dim sunlight started to slash the horizon instead of just coming down through the tree canopy. The group slowed down as it became clear that the woods were coming to an end. Dave hurried to the front of the group and put his hand up to stop them all. "We have to be careful," he said. "We don't know what lies up ahead. It's quiet, so I don't think it's a motorway or anything, but it could still be dangerous."
"We should send one person up ahead to check it out," Jan suggested.
"Good idea," said Dave. "Nick, go see what we're dealing with." Nick was surprised to hear his name. "Me?" "Yeah, what's the problem? Just stay low and keep out of sight." "And why don't you do it?" Dave huffed and pinched a roll of fat on his belly. "Because I'm not as light on my feet as you are." Nick sighed. He didn't have a problem with going, it made sense. What he had a problem with was Dave thinking he had any right to give him orders. "Still, someone needs to do it. It might as well be me." "Fine," he said, already moving towards the clearing. "Everyone wait here." The ground ahead was free of the roots and undergrowth that had made their progress so laborious over the last few hours. It was a relief not having to step so carefully. He crouched down low as he headed towards the clearing, squinting to make out what was lurking beyond the distant tree line. As he crept, he concentrated on what he could hear as well as what he could see, but aside from the various bird calls and wind-rustling bushes, there was total silence. He could only consider that as being positive. The last thing he wanted to hear was the bloodthirsty screech of an infected person. "It's almost like an alarm they have. They see prey and they go off like a siren." Beyond the tree line was something large and grey, something man-made. As Nick crept closer, it became clear what he was looking at. "Well, I'll be damned." The car park on the edge of the woods was vast and empty. Its several hundred white-lined parking spaces were vacant, the whole area a barren field of weathered concrete. At the near end was a long, single-story building, backing up against the base of a steep hill. "What is this place?" He knelt down in the grass and kept low as he headed down the embankment. He stepped cautiously onto the car park. In addition to the single-story building was something else. It looked like a cable car system. Its thick steel cords stretched up from the base of the hill all the way to the lofty summit. The cables seemed old, yet functional. The dozen or so carriage cars were antiquated, small and rickety, with bright red peeling paintwork, but they were also intact and seemingly operational. A ticket office and embarkation platform had been erected at the foot of the hill, backing up against one end of the single-story building. A large suspended sign read, "Ripley Heights Amusement Park and Zoo." "It's some kind of tourist trap." Nick scratched his chin and took another scan of the landscape. The whole area was deserted. Safe. "This could be interesting," he told himself, before heading back up the embankment and re-entering the woods. He needed to go and get the others. "Maybe one of them will know what this place is." The group was waiting patiently when Nick returned to them in the woods. He immediately motioned for them to join him. Cautiously, they did so. "What have we got?" Dave asked him. "Not exactly sure. There's a car park and a building. Looks like a cafe or a fast food place. There's an amusement park nearby, I think, up a massive hill. I haven't seen a single soul, and it looks pretty safe. There's not even any cars in the car park." "Good work," said Dave, patting him on the back like an old buddy. "Okay, people, let's be cautious and keep our eyes peeled. We may be able to find a phone inside this cafe, so we might finally be able to get a call through to our loved ones and the authorities." There was a muted cheer from the group. "Let's move," he said, leading the group in a slow-moving charge, heading through the same gap in the trees that Nick had.